Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. I'm Chip Patterson. That's Barton Simmons. We are coming to you full-throated and full-volumed and a little bit more well-rested now. I'm glad that you got home safe, by the way, because the last time our listeners heard you, you were literally on your way out the door.
I know. I
to go
made
to the
it
airport.
Home.
You made it home. This is a great thing to hear for the podcast listeners.
That's right. I did some serious father, 36 hours, and then back out. Now I'm in San Antonio.
That's right.
The great Riverwalk. This is always a week where we just like grind through it and eat just horrible, unhealthy food, and you know, don't sleep a ton, and just sort of I come out of this thing feeling really unhealthy. So if there's any San Antonio natives on the pod that have anything in the vicinity of the Riverwalk that you can recommend to me, I'm open to it, because man, Riverwalk has not impressed me with the food over the many years I've been coming here.
So what are you, do you just find yourself eating things that just, you don't have the time maybe to indulge in finer cuisines? It's just a grab it and go, whatever you can fit in your hand situation.
No, it's just the Riverwalk is like this, it's priced and catered towards like a tourist demographic. But the food is not good, nor is it healthy, nor is it economical. It's just like this really heavy, kind of gross, everywhere you go food that you pay, you know, $30 a meal for. I need some help. I need some help from the locals.
Okay, let me timestamp this for the episode description. Minute 137, Barton flames local San Antonio cuisine.
Listen, I have a lot of love for San Antonio. I've been here more years than I can count now, but the cuisine, I'm sure there's some good restaurants out there somewhere, but the Riverwalk, I don't got it.
We will be previewing the national championship game, Alabama-Clemson, the fourth edition of the college football playoff era. We'll be doing that either Saturday or Sunday. Wait until I get out to San Jose before we knock that out. Maybe even get some headlines, a little bit more information, better feel for the game. But Barton, it has been cracking in college football. There is no, whether it's Bevo charging at Uga in a real food chain kind of moment at the Sugar Bowl, whether it is the Georgia players who are talking all that trash on Twitter during the Clemson Notre Dame game. You know, this, like, there's a lot of fun to unpack, and we're going to try to hit on most of the highlights. I want to start with the University of Miami, because all of that I felt like it happened all while we were sort of en route and traveling and focused on the game, both the retirement of Mark Richt and then the about face for Manny Diaz. Like, as we're traveling home on Sunday and as all this is going down really, really quickly, you know, what was sort of your instant takes from a distance? Because unless you were plugged into this, I'd assumed that would be the best case outcome for Miami, but I was not hopeful for Miami that they were going to be able to convince Manny Diaz to come back. How do you see that one? How do you read that one playing out?
I mean, we talked about it when Manny Diaz left, didn't we kind of say, hey, this is there went sort of the only thing Miami had going for it.
Yes.
With Manny Diaz.
And we thought he would be back in 2 years. We were going to give Mark Richt 2 more years, then he was going to get fired, then Manny Diaz was coming back, and it all happened in 2 days.
Clearly this was a surprise to everybody. Now, how long Mark Richt had been stewing over it, who knows? But clearly this was a surprise to all involved. Otherwise, why would Manny Diaz leave? Basically, he's gone for 2 weeks, and it costs, you know, the University of Miami $4.2 million or whatever his buyout is from Temple to get him back. And, you know, he could have just – he's already – cleaned out his office, I'd imagine. He could have just moved stuff over one desk over. Right. Instead, he's got to, you know, fly it back down from Philly. But I think even though it was sort of intriguing to see what names were popping up, people yelling Dino Babers, you know, the Mike Norvells, the just sort of whatever, the hot names that were sort of starting to sort of emerge for that job. I do think Manny Diaz, I mean, that's a no-brainer, makes sense higher up. But I will be very interested in what his OC is, because defense isn't the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope he's – and so many of the real offensive minds that we really kind of know about and are proven commodities are their head coaches. So who's the offensive coordinator he's going to lure to Miami? Who's going to open things up? And where is he going to get him? And is he even going to be a name that people are really that people are sort of have a certainty about? So I think this is going to be a really interesting coaching staff hire.
There was a coach that was hired at Appalachian State that I think you should go talk to, and that's Ken Dorsey. Ken Dorsey got rave reviews for his work on the Carolina Panthers staff, and he was the quarterback's coach there. And I just think with the Miami connection, like you could frown on that and say like that's a very almost USC like hire to go to Ken Dorsey. But if you want to continue to just lean into this, this all out type thing, I think Ken Dorsey is a coach on the rise who is coming off of a pretty decent stint with the Panthers. And so I would not think that is a bad hire, even if he lacks the college coaching experience.
Well, I don't know one way or the other on that one, because didn't he just – I mean, he was just at like FIU
– in like an office job.
Like a associate AD job or something. And has he been announced as the offensive coordinator at App State or just an offensive assistant? That was a little unclear to me.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been finalized yet.
Well, okay. Either way, that'd be interesting. But again, that would take someone with more insight than I've got to stamp that one. And maybe that's you, but I don't know. I'll have to trust you on that one. But it's an interesting name at least.
But the idea I would think is that Miami, I don't know if Miami right now is ready to go. Like, they could open up to a more futuristic concepts, but I don't think right now if Miami is ready to take a drastic step away from what has mostly been a pro style attack.
Why? What are you scared of, Chip? What are you scared of?
I think a defense that's built around them the real thickness in the front seven, you can't put them back on the field that often. We need an offense that's going to have long drives.
I'm pushing back on that, like, in a very enthusiastic way. They are in Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County. Like that is where Miami. That is where you find the U, and all there is down there. There may not be a quarterback every year. There may not be a premier offensive lineman every year. There's probably going to be defensive talent on both sides of the ball, but maybe there's not a big body jumbo defensive lineman every year that's just like a no-doubt guy. But there is no doubt. Every year, there is no doubt what they got. They got DBs, they got receivers. And they got skill, and they got speed. Why, like, forget everything else. That needs to be featured. They need to be spread as F. Like, go hire Jeff Lebby. There you go. There's your guy. Hire Jeff Lebby from UCF and say, come on down to Miami and run what you're running at UCF. And at the very least, at Miami, you're going to have a fan base who's so fed up from the Al Golden to the Mark Richt years of not having an exciting, explosive offense, they'll be willing to grant you a couple extra points on defense if they feel like there's an offense that's going to start scoring points and putting athletes on the field and athletes in a position to be successful in space. So That's if I'm Manny Diaz, that's my first call. I'm calling Jeff Lebby at UCF, the same guy that's been getting flirted with by Tennessee and a couple of the other OC jobs that are coming. Ole Miss was another one I think that he was getting some buzz for. So I think that's the first call.
The comments from Manny Diaz at his press conference this morning did not address the offensive woes as an offensive issue. He very much made it a quarterback issue. And that was interesting to me.
That is interesting. I've not heard of his presser. That is interesting to me. Because if he's going to just sit here and, you know, if
he's looking at the room, he said, there's not one starting quarterback in that room.
He didn't say that, though.
No, like, of course he did.
You're reading between the lines?
Yeah, I'm reading between the lines that he's looking at the personnel, and I think Miami is probably going to suddenly become a big player in the transfer market.
Yeah. Wow, that just would be if they just stick with the same old.
I don't think that you could assume same old, same old. You're right. You got to wait for the hire, but I don't know. For some reason, like, does Manny Diaz have negative emotions from his Texas stint? Is he going to be too fearful to really open it all the way up for fear of what it would do to expose a defense?
What? All right. Who was the OC back then? Like, what are you saying? What are you saying, that the Texas didn't protect their defense enough back then? Was that the problem?
They were definitely spread focused. They were still trying to recapture Colt McCoy greatness. They were still operating, and they didn't have the quarterbacks. They didn't have a Colt McCoy, but that was basically still the game plan.
All right. Well, I hope he's not. If this is – I'm excited about this hire from Miami because it makes sense on a lot of fronts, but if this is more of the same offensively, then I'm – as looking at it from a Miami perspective, then I'm sort of like, well, come on, Manny. Are you that much of a guru that I wouldn't be more excited about Dino – like, think about Dino Babers down there.
Right, but I think you can
think
win
that
the
offense down there.
I think you can win an ACC championship with the Baltimore Ravens. You know, I mean, or that same, or even last year's Miami team. If the last year's Miami team doesn't have to play Clemson, and if they're healthier on offense with Amon Richards and a few of those playmakers in the lineup, and not Malik Rozier at quarterback, that team can win an ACC championship. You can do essentially what Mark Richt and Manny Diaz had put in place. I think it can be done. I think it was just obvious that either recruiting or development, there were just too many misses.
But my point is, play to what you're most capable of. Play to what, like, UCF is getting the fourth pick in the state of Florida, at best. Fourth pick among the schools in the state of Florida. Who, you know, that doesn't even count all the schools like Alabama and Georgia coming in to pilfer and poach recruits, and look what they're putting together offensively. And I know you can say they're playing the AAC, whatever, but that's my, like, you have got players in there at the skill position. Like, that's your bread. That should be your bread and butter. Let's not go try to find an offensive line that can, you know, mash people. Let's find a system that can compensate for not having an offensive line that can mash people and can put people in space. So that's my soapbox on the Miami thing.
I like it. I love that passion. I can't wait to see who the hire is, because you're either going to be standing
and
applauding.
I will have an opinion.
Yeah, you will. From you know, not maybe wondering if you're going to open it up to the old One Back Clinic, I think was the name of it, where it was born, but an air raid ride or die. Dana Holgorsen. He's leaving West Virginia, and he's taking the Houston job. My joke for this one, Barton, is for the first time, Dana knew when to leave the table.
Yes.
Yeah. Just a lifelong card player. This was a time where I think he looked around. I think he looked at his stack of chips that he has coming back, and he said, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and get out of town. And there was a lot of different reporting in terms of motivation. Obviously, Houston probably views this through a lens of they got one from the Big 12. It was a splashy name. How do you view this one from sort of both the Dana, the Houston, and also maybe even the West Virginia side? Maybe we'll save West Virginia for last on this one.
Well, I mean, Houston was getting totally like trashed in the media for canning Major Applewhite after what they go 7-6 this year.
Yeah.
And because they think that they're this powerhouse that no one else sees. And Fertitta, their chairman of the board or whatever the equivalent is at that university, has said, "We fire you. Major better come in and win." When they hired him, saying, "We fire you for winning 8 games. So you better win 9, 10, 11. And they fired him. So I guess that's their men of their word in that regard. But I wasn't necessarily stoked about the Major Applewhite hire to begin with. That felt like that just didn't feel like it was going to be the guy. And when they fired him, I was interested in who they would be able to get. And I don't know that you could ask for much better than Dana Holgorsen, basically stealing one from the Big 12. I mean, and now the marriage wasn't super, super loving, I guess, in West Virginia between Dana and the administration. But you're still getting one from the Big 12. And the guy just had a pretty good year. And I would expect he's going to do really well at Houston.
They asked for permission, and West Virginia said sure. They didn't even put up a fight. That's what lets you know that, like, that. And so, Dana Holgorsen's coming off of Will Grier. He's coming off of, he's losing David Sills. And it was going to be, I believe it was going to end up being a step back season. Now, in terms of, right, of what they got, he was 9-21 against ranked teams. They never beat Oklahoma. And I think that while he brought a lot of excitement initially, and certainly the Orange Bowl championship and the success in the Big East and Geno Smith and all that is definitely meaningful, I do wonder if, like, West Virginia fans are talking themselves into the idea that, this is going to end up being a good thing for West Virginia. I'm not ready to go that far, but I do think that it is not as much of a steal as otherwise, because if Dana Holgorsen were on the market for any job, like if all of a sudden replacement level Power 5 job is open, Dana Holgorsen's on the list, but I don't know if Dana Holgorsen's at the top of the list.
No. But and they're paying him what West Virginia wouldn't, and apparently they're giving him money to hire pretty big time staff. This is almost like a little bit of a we're gonna steal one from the Big 12, quote unquote. But it probably sounds like a bigger deal than it is, even though I think he is going to be successful there. I think it makes sense, and when it works, especially depending on what he hires. But I mean, Houston is still a program that is set up for tremendous success, and I think Dana Holgorsen is a guy that can tap into that.
I think Houston's one of the five Group of Five programs that I have the most confident would be able to make noise and be nationally relevant.
Houston, UCF, Boise State.
Yep.
Did you have five specifically, or was that an arbitrary number?
It was me thinking that I could not come up with five before I got to Houston. Off the bat, I went UCF and even USF, which, remember, was number two in the nation more than a decade ago. But I think that you can get that to a point where it's making some noise in a given season. UCF, USF, Boise State. Let's see.
I mean, I won't make you go through it, but that's But I agree with you.
And then Houston. I mean,
I mean, now the what's like the West Virginia response, I feel like, has been a little bit of a okay. Let's see what we can get. Thanks for your time and thanks for your work, Dana. We're not mad to see you go. We're not bitter to see you go. We're happy with what you accomplished here and appreciate all your work, but we're also going to be okay and we'll move on. That seems to be, that's sort of my sense on the vibe from West Virginia.
There is a fascinating opportunity now, because I think what West Virginia does, if I was to just, you know, make a prediction here, is that West Virginia goes back to that list of the five or six coaches that are the best available, that are at the top of everyone's list. Where does West Virginia view itself? Do they think they can go get another Power Five sitting head coach, or is this a Neil Brown, a Luke Fickell? What do you think is next for the Mountaineers? Because I'm not even sure in the wake of, like, this feels like as much of a time to just not blow it up, but if you want to just start something over and just hand the program the direction stylistically, the infrastructure, there's an opportunity here. Because Dana Holgorsen was hired by Oliver Luck, I'm pretty sure, who is now out. And they've had multiple changeovers at a lot of the leadership positions. So this is now, for the first time in almost a decade, a chance to really start rewriting what West Virginia football is, or maybe not. How do you see this one playing out?
I think you just go and decide which of those group of five guys you like the best. Fickell, Neil Brown, and Mike Norvell. Am I missing anybody? I mean, those are the yeah, main three. And see if any. I mean, look, those guys may not think West Virginia is a great job. They may think, look, we didn't get the job this year. Next year, we're going to be top of the call list.
Sure.
And next year could see a lot more movement than we saw this year. So maybe it might be a tougher sell than maybe West Virginia thinks, but I don't think you can go wrong with any of those three if you're making a hire for West Virginia at this point in the cycle.
If I'm Neil Brown, maybe I go, just because I would think that the team you're taking over would be ready for what you want to do offensively.
Yeah, I mean, that you could make the same argument with Mike Norvell, right?
Right, 100%.
Just sort of culturally, like, you're,
you're more more in line for them to hear what you're putting down.
Right, right.
I think for Luke Fickell to build a nasty, I think Luke Fickell probably stays at Cincinnati.
Well, yeah, and Luke Fickell in year two, to do what he did, you know, he could be in line for one of the big jobs if he has another, like, a 10-win season.
I think he does. That's one of the youngest teams in FBS.
Yeah.
They're bringing back a ton.
Yeah, he could be the name here in a couple years. So that's probably not the job he jumps for.
Yeah. All right, so here's a question. It is that time of year where we had, I guess, 8 NFL jobs are open, so a quarter of NFL jobs, 25%, are open right now. And who knows if that'll change by the time you listen to this. But the point is, that means we're on high alert on the college level, wondering who of our guys might get snatched. Now, there are some names that have been around, come around almost annually. There are others that are more seasonal, particularly to this year. The ones that we've seen just sort of, and again, these are names that are floating around. So I want to try and see how far we are willing to go with the idea that there is going to be potentially a late season opening here. Notre Dame's Brian Kelly, Baylor's Matt Rhule. Who else do we have? That's getting, obviously, Cliff Kingsbury, USC offensive coordinator, former Texas Tech coach. Who else is on the list right now that you've seen among the NFL talking head types?
Well, I mean, Lincoln Riley, we talked about. Matt Campbell, I don't know if you said him. And then Brian Kelly's getting the new little smoke. Those are the main ones. I mean, how about Cliff Kingsbury basically choosing USC OC job over the NFL, and then now that Black Monday hits, getting buzz for the NFL jobs? That'd be a punch in the gut, for Clay Helton and the Trojans.
That would be a death sentence to the Clay Helton era.
So, but there is, I think you're right. I think it would be a death sentence. There is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Chip. Is this, I think this is a pretty volatile year in NFL. Even by NFL standards, there's going to be, or there is currently, a lot of head jobs open. Is that an accurate statement?
I imagine. Yeah, I mean, like, if a fourth of your workforce is changing over, or not your workforce, but if a fourth of your head coaches are changing over, that's significant. And a bunch of them have lost jobs after like two or less years. The NFL owners are snapping their fingers real quick right now.
I just feel like if there's ever a year that another college guy jumps, doesn't this feel like the year? And there's suddenly like NFL candidate types. Matt Campbell and Matt Rhule are both sort of fit the NFL mold. I think Lincoln Riley is that train is out of the station at this point, or that bus has passed.
I mean, they announced a new contract extension and a raise in salary, and when they sent the press release out, it was with a big-ass graphic that said, staying home.
Right, he ain't, yeah.
Yeah, Oklahoma came out and announced to everybody when they got engaged, you know? Like, yeah. They put that on Facebook and Twitter.
Lincoln Riley's got one of the best jobs in football, not just college football, and you know, why go risk your job security when you're still building some there? So I get that. But Cliff Kingsbury, he's gone if he gets an NFL head coaching job. There's no – I mean, if he gets an offer, he's not choosing to be in the USC OC instead of being an NFL head coach. You know, I think Matt Rhule – I don't know that Matt Rhule will go doing a lot of flirting, because he kind of – you know, he flirted last year. But if Matt Rhule gets offered an NFL job, like, it just – it feels like a matter of time before Matt Rhule is in the NFL. So maybe this is a year. And then Brian Kelly – I hear that Brian Kelly has a little bit of an itch to the NFL. And look, it's either this year or never.
You think
Brian
so?
Kelly does, well, think about it. When is he ever going to have, I guess if he just sort of starts doing this every year where they're 11-1, 12-0, and he's in the playoffs every year, then maybe he's got the kind of buzz. But my hunch is that his stock is high right now. So if he wants to make a jump, he better go start pursuing it this year. I don't know whether he wants to or not, but I think it intrigues him at least.
I've been cautious because the instance of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' interest. You know, we see Brian Kelly's name is potentially getting linked to the Buccaneers, and then all of a sudden we get the report from somebody close to the Buccaneers that says someone inside the building familiar with the search process, they have no intention of hiring Brian Kelly. So it feels like so much of Brian Kelly's name being thrown around. Yes, it is probably powered a little bit by representation, and yes, it's always good to have your name come up in these coaching searches, but I just wonder how much effort he's willing to pursue, because an NFL franchise is more than happy to leak the idea that they are going to be checking out these college coaches. And college coaches, especially offensive ones, are all the rage. And so you're doing your job by at least entertaining the idea of a college coach, when at the end of the day, all you're really going to hire is another professional coordinator.
Right. Well, my point is not that I think he is interested or that I think he will pursue it. I'm just saying if he ever wants to go to the NFL, he ought to do some serious exploring this cycle, because I don't know if he's ever going to be. I think his stock's high right now, and you know if I don't know how many more 12-0 seasons he's got under his belt. And so I just would, if I'm Brian Kelly, if this is quietly something he's always wanted, I don't know if it is, but if it is something he's quietly always wanted, if he tells his wife at night, you know what, when can I make that NFL leap? You know, this has been fun, but let's do the NFL thing. I'm tired of recruiting. Let's do it sometime. He's got a 12-0 season to, to give him a little bit of juice this year, and I don't know that he's going to have that every year. So I'm just interested in seeing if that has some development to it.
Right, because this is how we get Notre Dame head coach Urban Meyer.
maybe too quick for that. Urban Meyer may need to just for a little bit of cover.
Well, you know, just say E plus R equals O. You know, the first event was me retiring. And the second one is Notre Dame job opening. My response is I say yes.
I mean, the Notre Dame job being open is such a game changer.
Yeah.
I think, you know what I'm doing? I'm probably mentally denying the chances that it'll happen because, A, like I've mentioned, his name has come up in a lot of NFL coaching searches only to see him back in South Bend. But B, it would turn the table over again. I don't know where Notre Dame would go. I don't know who they hire.
Yeah, we can't even explore it to the extent of like talking about where Notre Dame would go because it's not a serious enough possibility. But
I'm acknowledging that would be a big bleeping storyline to get dropped in our lap in mid January.
It would be enormous.
I'll say the most likely is Kingsbury taking a job. I will say the least likely is Dan Mullen.
Is there some Dan Mullen NFL buzz right now? I missed that.
I think that's probably agent fuel. Daniel Jeremiah, who I love a lot and follow for a lot of great NFL insight. Some interesting college names floating around the NFL openings. Rule, Kelly, Kingsbury, and Mullen. He's also carrying some Matt Rule water. I'd hire Matt Rule in a heartbeat. He's an outstanding leader and he'd set the tone for an entire organization. People love Matt Rule.
Yeah, they do love Matt Rule. And I don't know Matt Rule, but I know a lot of people that love Matt Rule.
Enough to make you believe he's the real deal? Like to put a Barton stamp of approval of being like, yeah, you know what? He might be it.
It from a college or just NFL or just in general?
Coaching. You know, I mean, obviously what they like about him is more intangible than results.
I mean, I cashed a Baylor over 5.5 games this year with someone in the office because they were busting my chops about me being hyping Baylor after I visited Baylor over the summer. And, part of it was just I think they'll be better. I think they'll get better. I think they'll continue to get better under him. And, I'll be drinking. I got $20 worth of beers off that one.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $150 win or lose. You can bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that is safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/cover and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
So, all right, Texas beats Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Tom Herman as a daggum dog coming through, and the straight up victory.
One more coaching thing we got to just touch on before we get out of the coaching. Rich Rodriguez, offensive coordinator at Ole Miss, paired with Mike McIntyre, defensive coordinator at Ole Miss. You buying that?
Buying.
You believe in that?
I think that combination means that the best teams on Ole Miss's schedule are in trouble. And that the teams that Ole Miss isn't equal to, it's just going to be the same stuff.
Is it a little bit weird that Matt Luke is now like the fourth highest profile coach on his own staff?
No. I think Matt Luke is totally okay with that. Because Matt Luke may be the fourth most recognizable or popular coach on the coaching staff everywhere in the world, but that ain't the case in Oxford. I mean, it's like when these head coaches end up coming through as analysts or assistants for Nick Saban's Alabama staff. Like, yeah, that that's fine and all, but you're still an assistant and you're not the head coach.
This is sort of like, so
Butch Jones walks around pretty anonymously as a member of the Alabama staff to be Butch Jones.
Right. Like Alabama goes and hires the Butch Joneses of the world as interns, and they just come in there and just sort of
grind,
poke around and grind. And Ole Miss, they'll go hire these guys, but they're paying them the big money to be their coordinators too. I think you're right. I think that I think my comparison there is these guys, just like the coaches at Alabama, are serving out their time to repair their image, get back in the good graces of the football, gather some positive energy in the football universe, and then they'll go take another head job. Rich Rodriguez, Mike McIntyre, probably 2 years here, and then or one, depending on how good they do this year, and then they're off to their next head job. And I think in some ways it's smart on both sides, because you get the Rick Neuheisels of the world that don't want to be a coordinator, and then they get in sort of the media world and they're a couple years away, and then it's sort of no one's really that excited to hire them as a head coach again. Whereas these guys can stay in sort of the consciousness nationally as a coach and not just as a former coach. And I bet it's a smart move for them. And I think it's, I can't imagine Ole Miss is going to hire much better than those guys at the coordinator spot. So that's probably a win-win for everybody.
I heard Nick Saban straight up use the term rehabilitate their career. And he understands that he is doing that. And he acknowledges that there is a part of him that enjoys being able to allow coaches to do that. It's weird. We think of him as being so cold and robotic, but Nick Saban has proven time and time again he can express human feelings towards another human.
Good guy.
All right, so let's get to this. Texas over Georgia. Are you just going to move beyond it? Are you trying to draw any bigger connections either to the SEC in these Sugar Bowl games or Georgia in general? What's the extent that you are willing to carry out any Georgia? Because there's also a Texas-related angle to this, including your claim about Sam Ellinger as an iconic Texas quarterback only looking stronger after his 3-touchdown MVP performance.
I'm feeling great about my Sam Ellinger will be an iconic Texas quarterback take. He is going to be every kid in the state of Texas's favorite football player before his career is done. He's got 2 more years. He's not going to leave. That is not an early entry in a draft guy.
No.
So he's going to play 4 years at Texas. They look like they're getting better. Colin Johnson and Lil Jordan Humphreys are coming back, I believe. Their defense is going to be really good in the future, and I think their offensive line is starting to improve. And so look, there's a backness element to this, though. I think we're kind of past playing that game about are they back or are they not. I think they're back enough to where I'm not shocked that they beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, and they're in the dang Sugar Bowl, but I just think Texas, what they've got coming now is a chance to be really good with a quarterback that is about to be the face of that state. And so I think that's pretty exciting if you're a Texas fan. So I think on the Texas end of it, this is the first season in a while where I think it's probably been really fun to be a Texas fan.
We played that one out on the Locks Pod, locking up Texas, and I might have even said, I would not be surprised if Texas wins the game. Texas was not, if you threw out, all of the record, the idea that Texas would show up to that game throw out the Maryland loss, throw out data points that would maybe lead you to think otherwise. If Texas shows up to that game ready to bring the fight and ready to, then it might beat Georgia. I think I knew that going in. And my only worry was that Georgia was going to play one of its best games of the season, and then all of a sudden I wouldn't get my double digit cover. But they did. But Georgia did not play one of its best games of the season. In fact, the miscues early created, all of a sudden this deficit where Texas was able to lean on its defense and then get just enough out of Ellinger to be able to get out of there with the win. I think that this was a very indicative of the Tom Herman Texas program. So it's a great sign. I'll tell you what, I'm excited to watch Texas and Oklahoma over the next 2 to 3 seasons as Texas has a legitimate chance after splitting with Oklahoma this year, win Red River, lose a classic Big 12 championship. I think that we look at the next 2 to 3 seasons and one of the biggest storylines in all of college football is whether Oklahoma can defend its throne against the Longhorns.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like that Texas is now officially coming for OU.
Right.
And I was thinking about this. It felt like Texas and I watched the game with Trey Scott, among other people. Though there's like 12 people down here at the Iron Bowl, and Trey was, we were watching the game at Hooters. You know, just as cliche as you could be, because we couldn't find any good food in town, and they had the game. So,
hey, a spicy chicken sandwich and a large domestic will get you out of there with a cheap meal and have you on your way. Absolutely.
Yeah, at least Hooters like prices are don't get the Riverwalk bump. But Trey's like an obnoxious Texas fan, and I feel like Texas fans for a while have been this sort of fan base where it's like they puff their chest and walk around like. Like they're your neighbor on your street that drives a big truck with a lift kit and revs their engine and but they're also sort of bouncing in and out of unemployment, just sort of don't really have their stuff together, but have this like rock and ride. And now all of a sudden Texas feels like they just gotta, like, you can, I'm okay with Texas puffing their chest out finally.
Sure.
And I think that the future is, and in some ways, like, I, for the first time in a while, like, if I was a Texas fan, like, that seems like it feels like be a pretty good place to be. Because Sam Ellinger, if he's on your team, pretty easy to root for. And so I think this is an interesting trajectory they're on here. I think on the Georgia end of things, it's okay. Well, just you go first. Like, what do you think? What do you take away from the Georgia deal?
I was disgusted by how many broad takeaways there were to a single exhibition game result. I'm not here for trying to point to the performance of Georgia or the loss of UCF as being anything that. As being anything that we should make any broad, determinations about the college football playoff, the playoff's effectiveness, the committee's effectiveness. It felt like there was a lot of consternation that really started with, the initial decision. Remember, that was on Selection Sunday. Georgia got screwed. Then Notre Dame has a really bad performance against Clemson, which, as we mentioned, a few plays go differently when it's 9-7. That's a totally different game. And I think that as we were able to put some context around the Clemson-Notre Dame result and in discussing Notre Dame, I think that that helped me have a more clear-eyed view of the Texas-Georgia result, which allowed me to be like, well, okay, fine. That's not the case. I just don't see why you should be able to take the New Year's Six results as either evidence for or against the entire postseason model.
No, I agree with, like, I'm with you. Like, but the same thing on the Notre Dame deal too. Like, you can't, none of this, like, the results isn't a justification or an indictment of the process. If you want to argue the process, then fine, argue the process. But argue the resumes before they get into the postseason. Argue what they did. If you believe that what Georgia did leading up to the postseason earned them the right to play in the playoffs over a Notre Dame at that time, then okay. But I don't want to hear how look, Notre Dame lost. You see, told you they shouldn't have been in there. Or look, Georgia lost. See, Georgia, you shouldn't have been bellyaching. You didn't deserve to be in either. That is irrelevant to me. Like it's relevant, I guess, but it's not that you're judging someone on their resume, and we don't have a time machine, and so we're not trying to map out the best games. We're not trying to, like I said, we could get Vegas to give us the who would have the closest point spread, and they may pick some 7-3 team. But it's about what have you earned relative to how good are you and how good do we think you are? And that's why there was a little bit of poetic justice to this because Georgia was, some of the biggest belly achers.
I mean, the players were on Twitter talking about it during the game.
Yeah, man, you got to go take care of business if you're going to be like
that's bad karma.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I still think that Georgia is one of the top four teams in college football. I still think Georgia didn't deserve to be in the college football playoffs. I still think Notre Dame likely isn't one of the top four teams in college football. I still think Notre Dame deserved to be in the college football playoffs because we don't know any of this stuff. We just don't know. And we can't decide that we're smarter than the results. And so this is just that's my
thing. I think you can be one of the four best teams in college football, but if you don't play like one of the four best teams in college football as often as someone else does, then you're not one of the four best teams in college football.
Right. So I just hate how these type of results embolden people to go out and just get on the soapbox for whatever their talking point has been all year.
Right.
Like you're just all you're doing is just
cherry picking.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You're just tailoring like whatever the new data point is towards your message. When in reality is like, just like you said, these are just anything can happen on any one bowl, certainly any bowl game.
They don't play for like 24 days.
Like, right.
You want to know why teams have cold starts? Because they're cold. Because it is impossible to get up to game speed until you get out there.
You want to know why I crushed bowl season this year? Because I spent more time than I ever have in the past actually studying and reading like stories by local beat writers on every game, trying to figure out what the motivating indicators were in each game. It doesn't matter who the better teams are. Doesn't matter what, just throw the stats out the window. This is bowl season across the board. And So this is just the latest example of that.
All right. I got to run to CBS Sports HQ in about 5 minutes. Always watch CBS Sports HQ, of course. Anything else stand out from bowl season?
I think Florida, Michigan.
Oh, you
was
got
interesting.
Jim Harbaugh.
I got my Harbaugh take is that Harbaugh, if he doesn't change the system offensively and defensively for that matter, then he needs to recruit better players. That's not super easy to do because they're already trying in recruiting. But they're not recruiting as well as Ohio State or Alabama or Georgia.
So when they play teams with lesser talent, they smash them.
They're going to freaking dominate them. But when Florida does not have lesser talent than Michigan. That's the thing. SEC sort of stood up a little bit. I mean, Penn State, for Kentucky to go be Penn State, I guess my final answer on Kentucky is they're good.
They're good.
Like, I've been waffling back and forth. They're good. They're not good. I guess I got to have a final answer if Kentucky's good.
I mean, there's some, the longevity of that goodness, I don't think they're going to win 10 games next year. But there has been enough time for Mark Stoops to have a nasty defensive identity built into that program. And I think that we just assume that for at least the next 2 to 3 years, Kentucky's going to be a bowl-eligible team with a nasty defense. And if you go play Kentucky's game, they might beat you.
Yeah. James Franklin's already fired at a wide receivers coach. So there's going to be some self-reflection in State College.
Yeah, he should have some self-reflection about deciding to kick a field goal on 4th and 6 from the 17-yard line. When
I didn't hate that as much as everyone else did. Maybe I was wrong.
Yeah,
the time I was like, look, there's 4.5 minutes left.
I know.
They got 3 timeouts. Like, I got it. Like, it was more likely that they were going to be able to kick 2 field goals than it was they would get that 4th and 6. I don't know.
They got all those stops, but it's like it goes back to one of those things where Benny Snell was just a man possessed. And it's like, I don't, as much as my defense has been able to get stops in the fourth quarter, if it comes down to the fourth quarter, then whether it's Trace McSorley or Benny Snell, whoever's getting that ball in those moments, they're going to be able to succeed. So that's why I keep it with Trace McSorley.
The Melly Rose Bowl take is, it was like having Washington on the side there. What a phenomenal cover. Because at the end of the game, there was sort of this buzz and energy around the stadium and in the broadcast. And it was as if everyone was just watching to see if they covered.
Right.
Because no one thought Washington was going to win that game. Like, they weren't actually coming back to try to win it. It was just like, oh, man, Washington's got the ball again. Like, let's see if they can score this one to cut it to within 5.5. Like, that was a very satisfying cover.
So even if you got it at 5.5, you were safe, because
except
that one
for
came.
The 2-point conversion return,
right,
nearly would have busted up the 5.5.
Right, came real close.
And it looked like it was going to happen there for a minute.
Because if you had 6, you would have been fine. You would have had a push then, I guess.
I think we had like 6.5 or 7, so
right.
we were Gucci. But like the 5.5 was where there was. Then you're getting into danger zone.
All right, we will link up on the weekend for an in-depth preview of Alabama and Clemson, the College Football Playoff National Championship game. You can follow Barton on Twitter at Barton Simmons. He's down there. He's at the All-America game, and he's killing it. Follow me at Chip_Patterson. Barton, thank you very much.
Dessert.